I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Radiolab has given a home to discovery and curiosity as a radio program carried by KLCC and over 500 other stations, and as a podcast now reaching 5 million people. Co-hosts Robert Krulwich and Jad Abumrad have thrived by exploring large ideas in a zone where science and storytelling and mystery all merge. Robert Krulwich will take a live audience behind the scenes as he presents Inside Science with Radiolab's Robert Krulwich at the Halt Center in Eugene on Saturday, January 21st. He joins me from the WNYC studios in New York. Welcome, Robert.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, Radiolab does have a sense of shared discovery as a core focus. Why choose a place of not knowing as a focus rather than a place of expertise?
That is exactly what I'm going to be talking about. I think there's a very deep politics to our show. It isn't like Republican-Democratic politics, but it's the politics of just being curious. It is hard when you're not a kid or when you don't have a lot of time to find a place to just sort of sit back and wonder about something deeply. And when we started this, we didn't think, and neither did a lot of the people where we worked, that anybody would want to take time off to discuss, I don't know, some problem in biology or physics or philosophy. But Jad and I were friends, and we would fall into these conversations, and we wondered what it would be like if we dutied them up a little bit and made them hard to resist. So we didn't know if it was possible, but what we decided to do is think big thoughts playfully and stupidly, I think was our plan. Because neither of us are geniuses or anything, and our formal training in the subject we chose at first to concentrate on, which is science, is nil. I mean, neither of us were particularly, you know, well-read in science, but we were both very curious about simple things, like you look at a cloud in the sky, you know it's moist, you've been in clouds when you've hiked in mountains, you've flown through them and seen little dewdrops on the window, so you think, well, I guess that's just a lot of water up there. Anyone who's carried a pail of water knows that water is heavy, even in small amounts. So a cloud that's a quarter mile high and big, they must have like 50,000 tons of water up there and nothing underneath, like not a thing underneath. Like it's just blue there or empty. So the question arises, well, what's holding the water up? Why doesn't the cloud fall down? Now, that's just a very simple four-year-old question, but it's not usually asked by 54-year-olds, I think is what I was when we started. And we decided just to see what would happen if we kept our stupids awake and busy. And really what this was sort of a performance of learning something. It's what a curious person actually does. And we thought this would actually not only be interesting and fun, it might actually be useful to people to get to spend a little time with folks who are trying to learn with all the real troubles of learning. And the thing about journalism is it gets rid of, like, journalism is mostly, first of all, it's usually done in fairly quick bites. So a reporter can't come on the air and say, I don't know what I'm talking about right now. You just can't say that. Of course, when you get your assignment, you may not know what you're talking about, but you learn it and you fact check it and you double fact check it and you do all the things. So by the time you get on the air, you are knowing. And then you put on a voice which says, just from the way I'm talking, you're probably quite clear that I know what I'm talking about. No one in this tone talks without knowledge and authority. I must therefore have knowledge and authority. So we didn't do it that way. I talk through my nose a lot, as you can hear. And we just did it naturally to see what would happen. And it kind of took off, which is amazing.
I'm curious about your perceptions of the evolution of the art of storytelling. Do you think it's thriving or disappearing in this new digital age?
Oh, I think it can't ever disappear. Because I think really what a person is a collection of stories that you've strung together over your life. When my mommy, when my daddy, when that happened, when this happened, when I fell in love, when I fell out of love, when I, now I. That whole long list of autobiography is just stories. It's not really a list. And what's been happening lately is that you can have more of them more often when you choose at your election, portable to you, so that when you are in a hammock or running through the woods, or 4 weeks late for something that everyone else heard, you can procure the story and listen or watch when you like. And that's somewhat new.
And that on-demand world does create a situation, perhaps, where instant engagement with your audience is necessary, or else they turn away from what's next. So does that change how you lead stories to capture that attention?
Well, in the case of Radiolab, we began our adventure just before Steve Jobs began putting up iTunes and the iPod. So that came about a year into our life. With the Steve Jobs invention, we became aware that we had just gotten lucky. Because for reasons of vanity, really, and because my partner on this venture is so skillful at music and production, we decided early to try out what would happen if we told our stories with a lot of production. We orchestrated the news, is really what we were doing. That was the fun of it for us. That turned out to be very interesting because with the iPod, we're in your head, literally in your body. And if I then choose to use descriptive words like, let's imagine together a house on a hill, make it a blue house with a bright red roof. On television, I'd have to create the hill, create the house, create the roof, color it to my satisfaction. Some of you would say, I've never seen a hill like that. I don't know what that guy, that's not my house. What kind of roof is that? And you'd have an argument with it. But when I'm talking to you inside your head, something happens that you're not aware of, but you become my co-author. You can't help but paint whatever it is I'm describing. And you're painting it in your own personal strokes. So that has two effects. One is you hear it more exactly because you can see it so specifically and it's your invention. And second is because you're painting, that for some reason gives you more room for thought. When you're in there with me and we're talking together and we're painting together and we're doing it together. And so for some reason you listen more closely. I think probably because you're authoring it as we go. That means that we can go deeper and tell more and stay together longer than we could in the older forms.
You mentioned there orchestrating the news. Does that mean that the news becomes music in a way?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. So when I say news becomes music in a way, what I'm really saying is I'm going to explore a couple of ideas. And to help you and me explain and understand what we're talking about, I'm going to flavor it a little bit. We actually create layers and layers and layers of sound designed to make the ideas we're talking about a little friendlier or stickier. It's not like when you've got a soap opera and the girl looks at the boy for the first time and then you hear this attack of violins going, and you know, okay, well, this person's about to fall in love. We don't do that. We do it as Jad creates it, which is a far more subtle, an invented bit of business. It's not like movie scoring. It's certainly not like news as it ordinarily is. I think the success of the show to some degree is a function of, you know, at first it was very, very, very hard for older people to hear and listen to.
You have found the music in so many ideas, which you would term often as big ideas. But in order to explore and orchestrate those ideas, you have to identify the ideas first, which can be a very difficult process. Do you have a discovery process for finding ideas?
The program does. I have been born lucky in that regard. Both my sister and I do not have any trouble finding things to think about or to notice. Not 50 minutes ago, I was looking at something. Some astronaut has a twin brother, and he was talking about relativity and time. He said, well, you know, when I was up off the Earth and going around the Earth for a whole year, time for me, if you follow Einstein, time for me was a little bit different from my Earth-bound brother, and I returned a wee bit younger than he. But on the other hand, I saw 3,776 sunsets and 3,775 sunrises more than he has. And I thought, well, wow. All I know is that whatever that thought is, that this guy had more something. Is it stories or is it just ups and downs of the sun? I don't know. I was just taken aback by that. And I kind of know that that idea, that time parses differently for people who are off the planet. I mean, obviously it does. But that so specifically that you get an extra cache of sunrises and sunsets. I don't know why, but I know that's going to go somewhere.
So it's an intuitive sense. It's kind of a gut sense. You can feel an idea.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, we're off on that. Like, so I'll turn to Jay. This happened a few years ago. I said, what are you thinking about? I said, oh, snail sex. He goes, oh, God. I said, no, it's really interesting because, like, if you're a snail, you're both a boy and a girl. They're hermaphrodites. So you have a penis. You also have a vagina. So you're thinking, hmm. So now the normal business of having sex where you go and if you're the boy, you say, oh, I really want some. I hope I get some. And that's in a snail. But also the more protective part of sex, like, oh, I really want some too, but I have to protect what is, I only have a certain number of eggs and this person's going to come in me and I don't want them to be diseased and da-da-da-da-da. Like, but imagine if you had both of those thoughts simultaneously in you. So you were both a poker and a pokey. I don't care about this. I find it ugly and peculiar. I said, no, but think about it. Like, let me just show you some snail sex. And he goes, I don't want to see it. I said, no, look at this. And then, it's really slow. It's really slow. Like, the snails are just, they seem to be, like, heavily freighted with thinking. Although they're very, very, they're mostly muscles, so they can wind around each other in very enticing and kind of beautiful and very sexy ways. But clearly, there's a deep hesitation if you're a snail about to have a night of passion or a morning of passion than if you're a human. And for some reason, I find that wonderful as a starting point. But I don't always take the crowd along with me, boy, put it mildly.
And there's an example of perhaps a difference between you and Jad about what is a good idea for the show.
Yeah.
Is difference and disagreement a key part of your collaboration and an effective part?
Yeah, because first of all, we are different ages. I mean, that was the weird part. So I'm like 27 years older than him. So what happened was when we met, like the very first day we met, we were just comparing notes. And he said, well, I came to New York and I did this. I said, oh, that's what I did too. Then I went on to that. I said, oh, that's where I went too. And I went to this college. I said, oh, my God, that's where I went too. And I said, well, that's weird. Like so you're like a doppelganger. I said, no, I'm not a doppelganger. I just happened to have done the three things that you did. And so we looked at each other and started to laugh. And then we just became friends. Like, I don't know why. Because, like, it's not normal in America for an older guy and a younger guy to just become pals. And we didn't really become – we just had breakfast all the time. Over the years, the differences between us are as important as the similarities. The most important similarity is that we have never, for some reason, disagreed about, and this is very crucial, when we're done. We disagree a lot about how to start and what to talk about and how to do it. But when this is largely the beauty business, really, for us. It's like just getting the thought captured in such a way that it satisfies. It satisfies given your amount of time and your resources to do it. If we didn't have that ability to sort of come together at the end, imagine if Gilbert and Sullivan had never been able to finish a play. We wouldn't know who they were. So that turns out to be wonderful. But between the beginning and then, it's all bamming each other a lot of the time. Or sometimes just enjoying the difference. Like, he's afraid at any moment I'm going to break into show music, which is the music of my generation. And, I think that a robotic drum, his electronic music is just ugly. So musically, we're completely in disagreement, and yet we're doing a musical. So it's sort of interesting. And if I can burst out into, oh, what a beautiful morning, he just winces, and I love that.
One of the things that he's talked about is how being between the American world and his Lebanese heritage has helped him with insight. Are you between worlds in a way that brings you insight also?
Well, I think the age difference is tribal. There's a lot of politically correct stuff which he just assumes automatically, and I don't. I grew up in a time where mean words were said all the time, and you just were supposed to suck it up. And so I don't get quite as upset by it as he does or as my kids do. It's only sensible. When you're a storyteller, like what you have in your head is you're the raw ingredients. So if you grew up, the music in your head are certain jingles that were, Anison commercials and Pepsi commercials and the Johnny Carson theme music late at night and all of the comedians and the music and the machines, the ticker machines that I heard Even odd little things like, you know, when you go into a gas station and you roll over a wire and a ding tells the person in the gas station, oh, there's a customer there. These are the sounds that I have in my head. Jad has a completely different set of sounds in his head. We compare notes, but we really can't hold hands that way. Like, my music and his music are different, and that is really interesting. In our culture, there's not a lot of cross-generational teaming up, oddly enough. I don't know why. It's fun, but it's also irritating, and it's fascinating.
So, I would think it would also be helpful to you as a storyteller, because one of the most important aspects of storytelling is listening and listening to different perspectives.
Yes.
So that must feed your sense of listening. Do you cultivate that sense of listening intentionally?
Basically, the part you don't hear about what we do is that exactly what you just said. We listen to each other's work very closely and then edit after a very thick listen. And there's not just us. There's Soren Wheeler, our executive producer, who's in there every day, all the time. And so the three of us, and then increasingly the reporters themselves, have to learn to listen for shape, for hello and goodbye, for whether the beats of the story are in line with an editorial. Like if I want you to hear the word eraser, I would say eraser. I wouldn't go eraser. So that's an ordinary. You don't go down in volume when you want to be emphatic. We have about 50, 60 colors like that, where you have to listen to tell your colleague, I got it, or I didn't get it enough, or I got it too much. They all require modulations, which is essentially musical solutions, like go down, get softer, come quicker to the halt, get quiet, like this, or get very fast and noisy in particular, you know, that sort of thing. So all those things require double listening, not only listening for what is being said, but for how it's being said. And that's, I think, what we do that other folks don't do as much or as well.
Which is why, in a sense, too, you can get the emotion of music sung in a language you don't understand, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
In the end, do you think it's more important to have good questions than answers to have a successful relationship with this world we're
in? Did you cheat? How do you, like, those are the, yes. We almost never conclude. We're not the kind of show which comes to a conclusion, and that's fully intentional. We'll create a problem, we'll explore it to the best of our ability, will then usually end with, oh, I see. No, we never do that. We end with, there's a lot of things not finishing in that sound I just made. And we don't finish. Because I think, and this is somewhat radical, but one of the things that curious people do is they stay curious and they stay hungry and they don't get easily satisfied. In fact, the best place to be is pregnant with your next question. So we sort of have almost an ill feeling about coming to a conclusion. Whereas in many broadcast networks and so on, they want to teach you something and lay it in and make it clear and then end it and say, and so now we understand. We just don't do that. Because I think philosophically, we think we're always on our way to a better understanding, and it is very possible, no matter how convinced we have just become by our own beautifully convincing argument, that we're wrong.
Not knowing is the place of openness when it comes right down to it in the end.
That's right. That's what I think.
Robert Krulwich, co-host of Radiolab. He'll present Inside Science with Radiolab's Robert Krulwich at the Holt Center in Eugene on Saturday, January 21st at 8 p.m. Tickets and information at haltcenter.org. Radiolab airs on KLCC on Sundays at 10 a.m. and Thursdays at 6:30 p.m. For podcasts and more information, radiolab.org. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.